Welcome to Chacha Up, Shahaba City Library's YA podcast, where we read young adult books and then review them for you.
Before we start, let me issue a spoiler warning. We will be talking plot points, discussing characters in depth, and definitely spoiling the ending.
Do any characters die?
We'll be talking about them if they did.
I'm Gabby.
And I'm Luke. Welcome to the last episode of Season 1.
We are back with Bindi to continue our read-through of the Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas.
If you haven't already, go check out our other reviews of the first two books in the series. Today we're talking about Book 3, Heir of Fire, which was published in 2014.
This one picks up with Selena in Wendlin, on her mission for the King of Adelan. She is sunk into a depression due to Nehemia's death, but is soon approached by a fae called Rowan, who takes her to meet Queen Maeve.
In Adelan, Dorian struggles with his emerging magic, though it leads him to become close with the healer Sorsha, and Kael must come to terms with revelations made about Selena's true identity and the rising rebel movement.
We are also introduced to two other new major characters, Adion and Manon. Adion Ashriver was mentioned in Book 2, but now we see a lot more of the general from Tarrison. Manon Blackbeak is an Iron Teeth witch, the first glimpse of whom we got through Baba Yellowlegs in Book 2.
An awful lot happens in this one. Bindi, what were your thoughts?
To be honest, Luke, I didn't really enjoy it. This series isn't my cup of tea at all, unfortunately.
Was it like the whole genre of the series?
I think it's the genre. It's not what I usually read. But in terms of this series, I enjoyed this book the most.
Have you read much fantasy?
Not really, so it's probably why I didn't overly enjoy
it. Yeah. I mean, it is a pretty, like, it's not crazy involved fantasy, but it's also, I don't think, for, like, a casual reader.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot going on, and this one really kind of steps it up from the first two books. It sort of, like, doubles itself each book, and it gets a lot more, like, the themes get a lot more intense and there's a lot more
complicated.
There's a lot more fantasy tropes, like high fantasy tropes in there. And obviously we've got like twice as many main characters now as well. I don't know, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Personally, I love that.
Yeah.
That's my jam. Like I'm all for that because I want all the different kinds of characters, and not to say I don't like it when there's only like one main character. But in this sort of fantasy, it works really well if you've got the, like, multiple story arcs happening at the same time, and then there's ways that, like, they interweave even when they're in different locations, and I really like that. This book for me is, I mean, I have said previously that this is probably my favourite one in the series, but it's my favourite because it's sort of like the jumping off point for the really big story in this series.
Which is?
Not going to say anything about it. Nice try. But, yeah, you get a lot more of those main characters, and I don't know if it's just me, but I really like the fact that you get to see Selena training and, like, getting better at using her abilities and stuff rather than it just happening suddenly or there's, like, a time jump or something. But we can talk about that more later.
Yeah, that's true, because in the first book she's already extremely competent at this kind of thing, and then we sort of jump into her as a slave as opposed to
and then suddenly,
building her up. She's already...
And suddenly you find out she has magic and she doesn't know how to use it. And it's like, if this book had just been like, oh, yes, she arrives in Wendlin and suddenly she learns how to use her magic and, you know, couple chapters in, she's fine. I wouldn't have believed that.
Yeah.
You know, like, she struggles hard in this book.
Yeah,
she really does.
I think at a certain point, she's almost too overpowering anyway. At a certain point, she floats in that sort of, that dangerous range of being just too overpowered for the story.
Yeah.
But
that's the
why
really,
the training is important.
I think that's a really interesting thing about her character too, because, like, she's written that way on purpose.
Mm.
You know, like, this whole thing is that she can't control herself.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know how to do that. But anyway, we're getting too far into it. Luke, what do you think in general?
It was my favourite of the three as well.
Mm.
This is also the first fantasy series I've read.
Yeah.
So it was probably a similar thought of playing to Bindi in
that
kind of context. I enjoyed it as a generally.
Mm.
I thought it was really well done. I really enjoyed the plot lines, the three separate plot lines.
Yeah.
I had my favourites.
Tell us.
Selena was my favourite plot line. Mm. I didn't think I would, because in the first two books, Kale was my favourite character.
Yeah.
And this one, not so much. I didn't really.
I feel like
him and Dorian get pushed to the side, get pushed to the back, and I just didn't find it that engaging.
I feel like particularly with those two, it is very much like they are happening in the background, and it's a lot more like they sort of feel like they're left behind, but they're setting up a lot more for things that happen later on. So it's like they're kind of like trying to tread carefully and like not disturb the waters, but then obviously by the end.
You feel as though they're being left behind because they're in a place where you've already been. And
exactly.
The other ones are exploring new areas and you think, they're just, you know, holding the fort kind of thing.
Yeah. Which obviously sort of changes by the end, but then it finishes.
Yes.
Like really suddenly.
We don't really get past that point.
Yeah. What did you guys think of Manon and the witches?
I actually really, at first, I had no idea what was going on. I'm like, who is this person? Why is there like so many pages about this person?
It's a bit like going through the last two books going, was she mentioned in the previous book? I've missed the chapter. But no, it was good. It was my second favourite storyline.
Yeah, I like that storyline. I feel like we have so much more to learn about her. Mm. There's so much more to her. At first I was like, oh, she sounds awful. And then towards the end of it, I was like, yes, I can't wait for her and Selena to meet.
See, that's the interesting thing about her, because I love Manon. And I have since, like, the first time I read, because I've read this a few times now, but, like, even that first chapter where she's hiding in the cottage and, like, you think she's being hunted by the villagers and then you realise, actually, no, she's, like, luring them in to murder them and, like, drink their blood. And I was just like, I am here for this. I don't know. It was just, like, all of those – I mean, it's a play on the whole, like, witch hunt thing.
Mm-hmm.
In history, obviously, but like she's a witch who fights back. She literally has like iron nails and iron teeth. And
I had trouble visualizing that.
And also the fact that she's like really beautiful.
Yeah, I think that was what it was.
Was that?
Just imagine she looked like an orc, but then they keep describing her as really beautiful.
Yes. Yeah.
So I was like, how does that kind of work?
But with like a grill on.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. Basically. And she has gold eyes.
I mean, I don't think anyone who's got a grill on their face is particularly beautiful.
But she doesn't always.
No.
Like, she can retract her teeth. And there's, like, this big thing
that
about...
That is kind of haunting, too.
I mean, yeah, but...
That's a haunting thought.
I mean, that's the whole character, though, isn't it? She's, you know, there's times where she's beautiful and then she's like, oh, no, I'm going to rip your throat out. You're like, okay.
And she also has, like... They have clear eyelids when
they're out. Which I, that's another, that there's cool. details in like all of the characters, because obviously they're a whole different race. Mm. They're not human. Mm-hmm. And like little details like that, I think, are done really well by Sarah.
Yeah, just differentiating.
Yeah, and then same with the Fae. So we finally get to meet some Fae who are not human. And I feel like you often have to remind yourself that they're not human, because obviously, we see a lot of the demi-fae who are, like, half-breeds.
Take human form, yeah.
Yeah. But we meet Rowan, and, like, he's this massive, massive guy, lots of tattoos, you know, and he can turn into a bird and or a hawk.
A hawk. Don't say a bird. You're selling him short.
He's a predator. but you know.
Of the bird variety. should.
But, you know, she's always describing, I mean, Selena, sorry, is always describing how he moves with, like, a lethal grace and he can stand really, like, still and it's, like, but a real predator, you know, feeling underneath. And, like, everyone, all the humans who ever, like, are around him are really scared and just, like, don't want to set him off sort of thing. And, you know, I think it's important to remember that they're not human. They are not human. And there's obviously bits in there which, you know, again, if we start going chronologically, we can talk about it more later, but where we learn about, you know, like they have mates, they don't just have relationships or whatever, and it's a lot more like animalistic, I would say, in their nature. So,
but a deeper connection too that humans are capable of.
Yeah, and obviously magic.
A lot of magic.
Not that humans don't have magic, but
I kind of had this idea in my head that he was like green or like not human. Like, I don't know, like, I'm
like
not
he's
sure
off the trees.
Until she described him as being like this tan. Really good looking tanned guy with blonde hair. And I was like, oh, I've just been picturing you green for like the last. I'm not sure where that came from, but anyway.
I love that though.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he might have green eyes or something. So, I mean,
he might.
Yeah, I can't remember. Not, and I feel like I'm. Green. I'm letting the fandom down by saying I can't remember, but, you know. Yeah.
Did you enjoy him as a character, like, overall? I'm sure, I know Gabby.
I mean, for me, it's hard to...
Her face lights up every time.
It's hard to differentiate how I feel about the characters just in this book to how I feel about them from, like, what happens in the next, like, three books, because they're all in it. Spoiler alert. Like, they keep being in the series. So, but I, from memory, I loved him from, like, the moment we met him because he was just, he was exciting.
Yeah.
And, like, I also like the fact that they don't just, I know, Luke, you have a thing about her and Selena in romantic relationships, but they don't,
gonna get to that.
But they don't like each other when they first meet each other, you know?
Yeah.
They hate each other when they first meet, and then they slowly become acquaintances, and then they slowly become friends, and they start to understand each other, and by the end they're like, we're in this together because we understand each other. And I really like that arc, you know, like, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I mean, I still,
like, again, it's slow burn, and a lot of things in this book are very slow burn, and I know that people don't like that in this book. Like, I've seen reviews online, people saying it's too slow, it's really boring, and I'm like, I don't know. I appreciate that it's slow burning to something that then goes like 1,000 miles an hour.
Yeah, for me, it's just the same with for her. I just didn't particularly enjoy her physical obsession of him. She's constantly ogling him and checking him out and talking about his body, and then, you know.
Yeah, but I feel like
it's not in a sexual way.
No, it's for her. It's that bravado because he's seen her at her absolute worst. Mm. And I reckon she's trying to like build that back up. And obviously because he knows who she is, he knows that she's Aelin from like the get-go.
Mm.
And he's just like, I don't care about all this bullshit that you've created of your life. You know, we're cutting straight through this. Like, I need you to just embrace yourself. And she won't. So like, she fights back with that, I think. What did you think? Yeah.
I love Rowan, but I thought he was a douchebag when he was first
definitely.
Like, oh, I'm not going to like this guy.
Oh, no, see, I kind of like that. I like that kind of part of him, that sort of...
The douchebag.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But again, later on, like, it takes a while, but you sort of learn why he acts like that because, you know, he thinks... I mean, basically, the whole point is that Maeve made him believe that she was some stuck-up princess who abandoned her people for a decade and let them die. When that's not what happened.
Yeah.
And obviously she's
a douchebag to him too.
Yeah.
But like I said, they hate each other when they first meet.
Yeah.
And they do clash and really hard for quite a while. Mm. And I don't know, I do really like that they slowly become friends and for specific reasons. Yeah. Like, there's stuff that happens that makes them realize you're not who I thought you were.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why this story was my favorite part of the book.
Yeah.
They're sort of ascent into friendship, I suppose.
Yeah.
It wasn't all just longing looks across the room.
Yeah, no. It wasn't like he was, it wasn't all just loving. I thought it was a little bit.
A friendship, yeah.
And one of the things, and this is going to sound really bad, that I love about him is that eventually when, I think it's maybe like halfway through, and Selena finally tells him what happened to Nehemia and that she was murdered by these two men, and he says, what happened to them? And she goes, you know, I gutted them and left them for dead. And he was like, he's the only person who said, good. Mm. Like, he's just like, well, that's the correct response. Everyone else has had that, like, knee-jerk reaction of, like, how could you do that? How could you just murder them? But he's, like, the one person who has understood why and, like, why that was important to her.
Because he's a killer too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's, like, 500 years old and he's a general and a warrior. And he understands, like, when you have your loved ones killed, that you have that, you know, need for revenge or whatever.
Yeah, I think his character really complimented Selena in this book because I'd previously said that I did not like her at all. But in this book, she was really stripped back and you understood what she has been through.
Yeah.
And I felt like
in detail too, because – I mean, they talk about it a bit throughout because obviously Maeve in particular keeps referring to her as Aelin when the few times they meet. But we do actually get the flashbacks of her as a child when the King of Adalar came to Terrasen. And obviously then you learn that it was all his fault that she had like a reaction and
it motivated him to
started to use her magic. Basically got her. It wasn't her fault that her parents were murdered, and she finally figures that out.
Yeah, I found it filled in the backstory really well of her background and her family and those questions that we didn't have answered in the first two books.
Yeah.
We knew something terrible had happened. We knew her family had all been killed. And
yeah.
This was so good. And I really like this. And you know what it reminded me of? It's really low-hanging fruit. You know how she goes through the visualization of the death? It reminded me of the last Harry Potter book when they go through and they read. There's a chapter where they retell how Harry's parents are killed.
Yeah.
And I felt, I read that and I thought, oh, that's what it reminds me of. Mm, yeah. You can tell I've read very little. That's like my little only fiction. Thing that I can compare it to. That was the first thing I thought of.
It's a good comparison. And I mean, it sounds, I keep sounding like such a horrible person, but I'm glad that we get to see that, like how it happened, because it's such a formative thing for her character and it happens at such a young age. Like she's only 8 when it happens, I think.
She's very young. Yes, she's young.
No, she is 10 years ago and she turns 19 in this book. It's such, it basically completely changes her as a person. Completely.
Mm.
And it's just, I mean, there's still some things about it that, like, we just basically see, you see that she falls into the river at the end and then that's it.
That's the end.
That, as a child, sorry, that was a bit vague. But we don't find out, like, how she ends up becoming the assassin or whatever.
We'll find that out. But, but I think the what Bindi was saying before and what you've addressed the last two books about how she wasn't very empathetic, that just helps.
It does.
Even though you know this has happened to her, you read her in the book, you're reading her live, and she's such a douchebag, right? among other things.
Yeah.
But this is just sort of something to make, it just grounds you and makes you remind you.
Yeah. Does that make you think then that a lot of it is that like bravado and like that shield that she's like the wall she's put up?
What do you mean?
To like deal with people?
Yeah.
And douchebaggery.
Oh,
But like,
or is it a shield or is it just a reflection of what's happened to her?
Yeah. Like it's, you know, it's really affected her, you know. It's not just, I mean, to be fair, it's pretty natural.
I think it's probably more a reflection of what's happened to her because she treats people who are not very nice to her, Rowan, for example, at the start, poorly.
Yeah, for a reason.
He deserves to be treated poorly.
Yeah.
But she treats other people who mean her no harm and treat her well, like Emery's and Luca. She's very offhand with them repeatedly, and I think that's probably more a reflection of where she is.
I mean, particularly, so we'll talk a bit about this plot line, I think kind of the chronology?
That's is that a word? Right. Yeah,
of this plot line, and then we might go to the other plot lines. So can I just say, the opening of this book, which is her on a rooftop in Wendland, just completely pissed and, like, dehydrated. Basically, but I love that because she gets there, and, like, you have that brief description of how she sees Galen?
Yes.
Anyway, she sees him and, like, he's actually going out to fight, like, he's blockade running.
Yeah.
And protecting his people and they love him so much. And she's like, I could have killed him, like, 3 days ago, like I was supposed to, but I don't want to. And she basically just gives up on everything.
Yeah.
And that's when you see that she's really sunk into a proper depression about Nehemia.
Galen is right.
I was like, oh, thank
you. George wasn't a serious guest for the rest of the That was a joke.
Like, obviously it's not a nice place to start, but I think it's a good place to start because then she's at rock bottom. You know, like all we can do in this book is build her back up. And obviously then
we get into it straight away. Like there's the argument that you could say the story's a bit slow at points. I think that's fair.
Mm.
But she's already there when she gets there. There's nothing worse than that this book had started and she was at sea.
Yeah, for 2 weeks.
And you know
we're
going to have to sit for 6 chapters and wait for her to get there.
I agree with that because I've read fantasy books about stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's not fun to read.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then obviously we move, Rowan takes her, well, she thinks they're going to Doranelle, which is the Fae Kingdom, to see Maeve, Queen Maeve, sorry. She gave her her proper title.
Yeah.
But then they get to Mistboard, which is basically like a border post.
Border town, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where all the demi-fae basically stay if they are not allowed into Doranelle because they're not good enough, basically, which I think is kind of low, but Maeve's not very nice. So, you know, not really that surprised.
Maeve comes to Mistwood, doesn't she?
Yeah, so that's when we finally get to meet her.
And sets you her a series of challenges, essentially, to
get a lot of an impression of her from that first meeting because it's pretty brief.
Yeah.
Did you guys have any thoughts on her from that one?
Not from the first one. Not really. I was – at the end, I was a little underwhelmed with her, but we can get to that if you want.
Yeah. No, we'll go in order just so we don't get too confused.
I kind of didn't trust her from the get-go. I don't know. I feel like that's probably like a good response. I don't know. It just didn't sound. I don't know.
Aunties in general are distrustful.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. The whole Auntie Maeve thing. I was like, oh, she's dodgy.
Yeah. And that's also too because she greets her with like, hello, Aelin Galathinius. Mm-hmm. And Selena's just like, no, stay away from me. Mm-hmm. And also because we learned that Selena's mother was trying to keep her away from Maeve.
Yeah.
And you're like, why? What's going on?
A lot of moving pieces.
Yeah, and then obviously that's where we get introduced to the whole idea of Rowan training her to become ready to go to Dorinel, and we meet the cast of people at Mist Ward, which is includes Emrys and Luca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like them.
Yeah, they're I like them too.
Yeah, so they're both Demi-Fae, and Emrys is just like, you just need a hug.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Like an old lovely man who cooks food for you.
What's not to like?
Yeah. I do kind of like Selena's dynamic with them, though. Obviously, it kind of it changes through her training with Rowan because Rowan really pushes her hard and she's like, I can't do this. I don't want to do this. Like, shift into her fae form and use her magic. But obviously, that's sort of the whole point. But that's what Rowan's there for. And obviously, that kind of – there is that point where he's kind of pushed her so far that she lashes out at Emrys and Luca.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And while I don't like that, I can understand – how she got to that. She's like, I don't care about you. Don't care about what you're going through. You know, she's very focused on her depression, which I think is pretty realistic.
It's reasonable and realistic, but it's hard to be empathetic. I found myself losing a little bit of empathy for her there.
Yeah.
Until we found out sort of more of her backstory. Yeah. The writer does a good job of ups and downs.
Yeah.
She earns your trust and you like it. Oh, she's reasonably likable. And then she does something obtuse or stupid or, out of blind grief or rage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you drop your opinion of her drops again. Then they build her back up.
Mm. But I mean, I think too, remembering that she is in like a true depression at this point as well. And like, she's basically given up on everything, you know, and also with her, within her training too, they have the whole, well, first of all, shouldn't skip ahead. They go to the barrow. And that's the scene where Rowan's like, you know, you need to make it across this, like, basically ancient graveyard.
Yeah.
I'll see you on the other side. And then she meets some mysterious creature. Luke, you want do you remember that scene?
Yeah, I do remember the scene, but it's all very – I really struggled with a lot of, like, the lore and magic stuff. Yeah. I don't know why. A lot of it was – like, I understood by the end what was going on in a very loose sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole point – because
there was
point,
the skinwalkers and there's the
– yeah, the Val. So the whole point at that point, too, is that we don't know what that creature is. We just know it's not a barrow white.
And Rowan doesn't know what it is either.
No. And that's because that, like, truly terrifies her, like, to her bones. And that's, I think, the bit where you realise that, okay, yeah, she can be really terrified. Like, she's not
She's not infallible.
Yeah. Like, there's a limit to her bravado. Which obviously then brings us to what I was going to say before is the mystery of the husks.
Yeah.
the dead bodies.
Yeah.
So the husks were, I thought that was really important in terms of the story for me because you needed a little bit of mystery. The training was just sort of happening.
Yeah.
I needed the next step. You needed something to sort of rekindle the interest in what was happening.
And then that also obviously draws back in at the end because then you realize that they're connected to what we eventually learn are the Valg princes.
Mm.
And we got information about the Valg in book 2, I believe. But kind of just like really general, they're not so great.
Yeah.
Sort of.
General, is it General Narok or is it Narok?
I'm not sure. Is it I think it might be Narok.
Narok?
Narok.
I think there's an A there somewhere.
Yeah. And so obviously then that leads us, because the Valg are draining Demi-Fae. But before we kind of realize all of that, we have, you know, Selena finally shifts and she fights with Rowan, runs away, and, you know, there's skinwalkers, and then she burns the skinwalkers to a crisp, but she survives, and that was like fist pump.
Sorry, a lot of bad demons in this part of the world.
Magic.
Yeah.
But okay. What's Maeve doing?
What have they been doing for 500 years?
Yeah.
Just letting them fester?
Probably one of my favorite bits, too, is when I think it's Beltane, and it's like they have like a fire festival, and she's finally kind of getting control of her powers, and Rowan gets her to control the fires that people like jumping over and stuff. Yeah. And so she basically, well, she thinks she burns out. And so she's literally like basically burning from the inside out. And I thought that was really written very well. And just, I don't know, it makes you feel, I don't know, like the heat of it all, if that makes sense.
And it makes you feel the responsibility of her power as well.
Yeah, because it's
because otherwise massive. It's just someone just throwing fire around.
Yeah. And because it is a part of her.
Yeah.
You know, and then obviously that leads to another scene that is not really that good, but I love it, is where, because Rowan has to put her in like the ice cold bath or whatever.
Steams her up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get her clothes off. But, you know, she's dying, so, but he comes back and he sees her her wounds from being lashed when she was a slave. And he has that really, like, instinctual reaction of rage and, like, he leaves and she's like, oh, everyone leaves. But he comes back and then, like, she doesn't have to go leave her, like, little tiny little room anymore.
Room anymore, yeah.
And that was a very little pivotal dormitory. Point in, like, their friendship, I thought. So while it's not very nice... thought it was necessary.
Yes. She hadn't mentioned that to him at that point, had she?
No,
she
made because he said at one point too, like, if you don't do this, I'll whip you.
Yeah.
And she had like a really, really intense reaction to that.
Yeah.
Obviously that all sort of leads, and I know we're jumping around a lot, but it all leads to them finding that there's Adelan soldiers and these mysterious princes. In caves on the coastline, which were the ones that had been draining the people. What did you guys think of the big battle at the end? And I know we've skipped over a lot of parts, you know, with them becoming friends and revealing their backstories or whatever, but it was the climax.
It was the climax. I was thinking that they might have had the climax wait till the next book. Because it all sort of happened very quickly. I thought it would build into some sort of battle.
Yeah.
And then the Vowel Princes would get away and they'd live to fight another day. But no.
So it didn't grow how you thought?
No. I thought these guys would be more important to this plotline moving along into book four and book five.
I wonder what that means.
Yeah. Because one of the issues I've had is looking at the characters, you go, oh, there's way too many sympathetic characters.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not enough bad guys.
Yeah.
Although they are the people in Mistward are betrayed by one of their own, who we thought was a nice guy. So
wow, what was his name?
I can't remember.
He was
he was the one training Luca though.
Yes,
yeah, that's and right. He lets the soldiers in through like the secret door, the
secret tunnel. Yeah,
yeah.
That was something I thought that maybe Naruk and his Vowel Princes would survive, and then would they be part of a later battle? But no, they're brown bread.
Yeah, I mean, like it's definitely a hard won battle. It definitely, I don't think it happens very easily.
Yeah. Do you worry that, I mean, you've read the rest of the book, so you know the answer to the question, but the way that she's able to defeat these demons, and we're only a third of the way through, or halfway through the series, like how much more,
you can't ask me these things. Ask Bindi.
Sorry, I'm really lost right now. I have to be honest, I'm completely lost. I've had like a complete blank.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you recall at the end... the Valg come to Mistward and then she, like, goes out to hold them off.
With her fire shields and does all that stuff.
And then
Rowan's friends
arrive and they help get the soldiers. And so basically she's just sacrificed herself because they're trying to, like, eat her.
Yeah, let's just say that I...
You don't remember?
Completely remember that. So I'm, like, having a complete blank.
That's okay.
Okay.
I've been reading through these notes.
We can keep talking about it because it's one of my favourite bits.
Yeah, you keep going.
I really enjoy, man, I'm enjoying all the things that aren't very nice. And that makes me sound such a bad person. But when she basically walks, so they've got wards on Mistward, funnily enough. She, because the Valg are coming with like this big cloud of black where everything dies inside of it. And she goes out to like buy them more time so Rowan can like kill the soldiers that have
infiltrated. It's like a massive Dutch oven, isn't it?
So she goes out to sacrifice herself, basically thinking, you know, she's not going to survive, but she'll – these people who helped her, like, she will get them
time. She
feels
like she owes it to them to give them a chance to get away.
But it's actually one of my favorite bits because she – one, she then realizes that the bottom of her power, which she's supposedly burnt out on, isn't anywhere near the bottom of her power, and she goes deeper and, like, gets more power and is fighting them. But then she has that moment where she thinks she's spent and they're like feeding on her and she's just like, just have at it. Yeah. I'm cool with you making me relive all the worst moments of my life.
Been there, done that
which
already.
Is like flashbacks of Nehemia being dead and like blaming her for being dead and, you know, Kale telling her she's a horrible human being, her parents being dead and all the fun things. But then she kind of gets to the bottom and she's like, what's left?
Yeah.
You know, and they kind of leave her alone for a little bit and then it's like, and this is actually my favorite scene, so I'm just going to talk about it right now. But she has that connection with her younger self.
Yeah.
So baby Aelin is what I shall call her, who's 8 years old. But she basically tells her to get up and, like, you know, you can do this. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's all good. Like, you've been through all of this, but you're still alive and all of that sort of thing. And it's just, like, in the moment, like, it sounds a bit – doesn't sound as impactful when I'm just explaining it, but like when you're reading it and she's gone through all these horrible things and she's like, well, I'm dead, like everything's horrible, yeah. Everyone's gonna die, and she kind of like, it's like classic scene of where she finds that last bit of strength
to get back up,
and it really reflects with book one, where Kale in the arena like tells her to get up but this time it's herself. You know, and that's, I don't know.
Anyway. See, I kind of interpret it kind of similar, but in a way where I suppose that the experiences she had, it's just normal for her to feel that way.
Yeah.
To feel completely empty and just, you know, having these because she's constantly talking about Nehemia.
Yeah.
Nehemia's died in the last book, but she's constantly being brought up.
So that, and also in this scene, we get the, like, Nehemia and her parents also kind of tell her to get up, just do it. But, like, it's the last person, like, who says it is herself, and I think that's very,
very nice. I think that's kind of why that scene...
It's all down to her, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got nothing to do with anyone else. It's always got to be to do with her. And obviously, in the middle there, she lets Rowan's cadre in.
Oh, yeah.
Into Mistward and...
The cat?
Yeah, Gabriel.
And you know, what are the other animals?
There's... Some wolves, another bird, the twin wolves. I sound like I haven't read this book like five times, but and then there's Lorcan, who just he doesn't shift. But anyway, yeah. And then obviously at the end of all of this, when she kind of does get back up, and Rowan comes out, and they find out that they're Karana, so they can like share power. So she, and then she kills them all, and it's great.
Yeah. There's a lot happening.
It was very climactic.
Yeah, there was a lot happening at the end there.
I mean, obviously, it's funny because then stuff happens after that where she finally goes to see Maeve.
I've got to be honest, at the end, my head was kind of spinning a bit.
Yeah.
I think Benny might agree. Yes. Yeah, my head was spinning because there was so much happening with all the mystery and the magic, and I don't know, maybe it's because I haven't read much of this kind of thing before.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like...
Keeping track of it.
Eyes were spinning. I was like, what's happening here? What's she doing?
Yeah,
what is this?
But the point at the end is that Rowan is no longer bound to Maeve and now he's bound to Selena.
Yeah.
That's one slave master to another.
Yeah.
But to be fair, she wasn't going to make him do it. He did it of his own accord. So
we could go down a whole rabbit hole.
They're bound together now.
Shall we look at...
We should move on.
Should we go to Manon's storyline very briefly?
Yes.
Because I know we've all enjoyed her.
Yes.
I was a little bit bemused at first, trying to work out where she fit into the story for the first half. Mm. I really enjoyed the way the story was put together, sort of the three witch clans and sort of the rivalry and the hatred, and that's clear from the word go.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So the other covens are the Yellow Legs and the Blue Bloods, and they're all in the Ferian Gap, and they basically have gone there on the behest.
You can consult the map.
So they go north from Fenharrow, but the whole idea is that they're going to become the aerial legions for the King of Adelan, and then they're going to get their home back, which they got exiled from. I love the dynamic between all of them because they're all horrible, but then Manon's own little coven, the 13, like, they are brutal, but they're also, like,
very loyal.
A family.
Yeah, there's the weird family dynamic there.
Yeah, it is weird.
In a loyal kind of sick way.
Yeah, because they've been brought up to not love anything.
Yeah.
Or like,
It's sort of like taking, like, sibling rivalry and sibling bondship sort of at the deepest level.
Yeah.
In a really, like, gruesome
very
way.
Deep level.
Yeah.
And obviously we get to see the Wyverns.
Yes. Yes, so I actually really liked that part of the book for someone who said they don't really like fantasy.
Mm.
So the Wyverns are the dragons.
Yes.
And that's where we touch on the war games, which was really exciting.
And the training to ride them and
picking
their Wyverns.
Yeah. And I felt like, and we'll get into this, the choice that Manon ultimately makes in her Wyvern really says a lot about her. So
yeah, I agree. Did you
I was gonna disagree. I didn't really like the dragon part.
Oh, at all?
No,
or just
kind of boring. I liked the Manon part when she was interacting with the witches and getting into each other and the politics behind it all. But the actual dragon selection, I sort of dozed through that part.
Really?
Sorry.
Oh my god, I love
that. What was that?
Bit.
What was that horse's name? Horse's name.
Abraxos.
So, it's a good name.
The bait beast.
He's a bait beast.
Yeah, no, I love that bit the yellow legs pushes her down into the pit or whatever. And this bait beast who's been like attacked by all these Wyverns, she sets him free and he saves her and kills the massive like bull. And then she kind of like realizes, oh, he's a warrior.
Yeah.
You know, he's a survivor like me. And I'm just like, they bond. And I basically, I know I shouldn't, but I always imagine that he looks like Toothless from How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
Which, because there's times where he acts very much like, you know, like a puppy or whatever.
Yeah.
Although he doesn't look anything like that. Because, like, he's a pretty big, scaly thing with two legs and, like, his front wings. Like, his wings are his front legs or whatever. But that's irrelevant. And obviously then, okay, let me just talk about, I mean, you guys don't read fantasy, but why do fantasy books always have to have giant spiders in them? Why? Please answer me that.
I think it's just that the classic fear, isn't it? Is there anything more visceral than arachnophobia?
Yeah. Oh my god, I hate
them
so much.
It's probably low hanging fruit because it's just such an easy, you know, easy grab because half the people are terrified of spiders.
I think it works well in these two because so Manon goes to the Stygian spiders to get the silk.
Yes.
Because they're giant talking spiders, which is even worse. But I like the fact that she basically tricks one into to giving it to her, and then she reinforces Abraxas' wings with it, which is I like that touch.
So do I. Yeah.
Because we very easily could have he could have just been fine.
And kills them, yeah.
Yeah, he could have been fine even though he spent his whole life being attacked, basically.
Yeah.
But they had the whole thing of replacing the spikes on his tail with iron and his teeth and, like, fixing his wings.
He sort of resembles her in a weird kind of...
Yeah, exactly. Yes. No, and then obviously in that the war games, of course Manon wins. But she also then saves Petra, who's the blue blood heir.
Yeah.
And that's kind of very, again, very revealing of her character because... That's not a thing the witches do.
Did you think there was too big of a gap from basically the training period to the war games? There's a huge section right in the sort of middle third of the book. We don't go back and we come back.
Yeah, it's mostly Selena.
It's Selena and Rowan
chapters.
For quite a while.
Yeah.
Right? And then there's a huge gap, but that's a few days reading for me.
Yeah.
And but 4 days later, I got back to them.
Yeah, I think it sort of works because they talk about how much training they did in that meantime, and I didn't want to read that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, we've already done a lot of training. We've gotten to the point where you can just go train and I don't need to see it.
Yeah.
But you do, so I kind of got to the end and I was like, oh, yeah, wait, don't we need the war games to happen at some point? And it was like the next chapter. I was like, there it is.
And I really loved that part with Petra.
Mm.
And it actually made me see similarities between Selena's character and Manon's character.
Yeah.
They both show these glimpses of humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they're raised to have been killers.
Yeah.
But there's something more there.
Yeah, that's why I kind of am a bit worried that there's too many sympathetic characters, you know? Because she's a bad character.
Yeah.
It's obvious that she's going to have a transformation. You can see the goodness in her.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, here's another one that'll be good.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, like,
where are the villains?
Selena and her are supposed to be, like, enemies. And,
and they'll all be there together, and then it'll be just one guy by himself.
So at the end of that plot line, they get sent to Morath, which is, I think, north again.
South. I saw it in the map.
Yeah.
Not 5 minutes ago.
But that's where Duke Parrington was going.
Oh, Duke Parrington.
Right.
Who we didn't see in this book at all.
That was a disappointment.
Mm, yeah. Anyway.
Duke Parrington, I love that name.
Yeah. But speaking of, shall we just quickly talk about...
I shall call him Duke Parrington.
The full title.
Full title.
Shall we just quickly talk about the storyline in Adelon?
It was... could have been done better, I thought.
I mean...
In theory, it's a good storyline.
It's just not very much.
No. The characters I liked in previous books, especially Kale.
Yeah.
Dorian's a bit... and I didn't like any of his chapters. Like, I really sped read when he would jump in a chapter.
Yeah.
Him and his healer, Sorsha. Have I said that right?
I think so.
Yeah. I just didn't bite on that one.
To me, it always feels very much like it's just kind of showing you glimpses so that when you get to the next book, it's not just like what happened to them in the last time period. Yeah.
It's almost filling space, though.
Yeah. But I mean,
there were some good parts with Aedion and Kale. But
yeah. See, that's the thing. We get Aedion. So that's right. He is Selena/Aelin's cousin.
Mm.
And he was mentioned in book 2 briefly, but he wasn't actually there. He's another character that I enjoy. But, I mean, I also probably love him a lot more just from stuff that happens in later books. So in this one, you don't really see him that much.
So he's not going to get killed at the start of the fourth book after he's captured. Well, there's a spoiler there.
Why would you say that?
But this was he was another example of just what I just said about Manon now.
Yeah.
He's portrayed initially, you think, oh, he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
And then within, what, a third of the book, you realise that he's...
Yeah, well, he's a traitor to the Adelon.
I know, but it's just another...
Yeah.
Not too many protagonists, but too many good guys.
You think about the amount of people that were introduced into this book.
Yes.
How many more books to come, so...
Yeah. And they do get bigger from here, too, so...
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what happens with the assassin, the guy who trained her?
Araban.
Araban, yes. Yeah. He's popped up.
He's mentioned a couple of times.
Yes.
Long story short, Dorian, you know, he and Kale aren't on the best of terms at this point. He goes for a walk with Aedion and gets pushed into a bush because Aedion's a child, apparently, at 25. And then that's when he goes to meet Sorsha, and then they kind of keep meeting, sort of a brief romance.
Sorsha's a healer.
He keeps inflicting wounds upon himself to go and hang out with her.
I mean, classic strategy right there. And then obviously during this time is when Kale, follows Aedion because he's very suspicious of him, and that's when he finds out that he's been meeting up with, the rebels.
Mm.
And then obviously he gets captured. And anyway, so they kind of go into cahoots with each other.
Yeah. It's quite the bromance.
I don't know how much of the bromance is there, though, because they don't trust each other and they don't really much like each other either.
Mm.
But obviously by the end of it, and this is skipping over quite a bit of plot, but they figure out about how the king stopped magic, which is obviously a pretty big revelation.
Yeah. And
the towers, he said, in Knoll, and...
There's one in the capital.
Yeah, so that's the bell tower that they went under.
Yeah.
What's the capital called?
Rift Tolls.
You just made me forget everything that I ever know just then. And then there's... It's on the map.
It's on the map.
I know it's we don't need
it
to...
It was where Norik was, wasn't it?
Amaroth. But I quite like that because it's a bit tropey, but in the way that it's very clear. It's not just like he did some hocus pocus and suddenly magic is gone. Like, there's a solid evidence of it happening.
He's the king of Adelaide of Fae. I'm looking at you in the eyes. No? Okay.
My answer. I'm just not saying anything. But obviously it ends pretty suddenly.
Yes. Well, it does for Sorsha, anyway.
It does. She was the filler character that we all knew would die from the beginning.
So you knew, you figured out straight away.
Oh, I felt she would.
Yeah?
I felt like there was no purpose for her. Mm. It was just this little character that they added in.
An emotional.
I wasn't surprised when she came to her.
Well, looking back over it now, recollecting the whole thing, you think, someone has to... to pay an emotional price for what's happened.
Did you guys guess that she was Ren's informant, though, for the rebels?
No.
No.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, see, when I first read it, I didn't see that at all either.
No. I don't have any kind of deductive reason.
her letters to her friend.
I'd make the worst detective, at a police station. Like, oh, is anyone confessed? No.
Well, see, that's the thing. They all got brought before the king, and Aedion did confess, yeah. and he was like, "Oh, that's nice to know, but actually,
I wasn't
it's
asking.
Her." Yeah. You're damn. Like, damn. And then, yeah, we end with Dorian using his magic on the king to get Kaol, well, because he's angry because his girlfriend has got her head chopped off, yeah. and to let Kaol run stay, away.
Yeah.
But then he gets a black collar put on.
So the king, does the king use magic then, or is he using the spell that he's implemented to ban magic or to limit magic?
What do you mean?
Well, you know how he's prevented magic from happening in what's the?
But no, because Dorian uses his magic and then like runs out of magic.
He runs out.
He uses it in like one big kind of because he's so emotional, you know.
Oh, okay, because I interpreted it as the king was using his own power to shrink him back to normal and then just...
No.
Really? Maybe I'm right. No, I'm wrong.
Maybe. I don't know. That's not what I got from
okay,
it.
Sorry,
no, I'm pretty certain Dorian just runs out of magic.
That's why I was asking, because I thought that the king was exerting his own spells or power on him.
I'm trying really hard not to answer any of your questions too directly, but I'm fairly certain that one's a no.
You've given me an answer there anyway.
Anyway, that's wraps up the storylines, which are very intense.
How many pages was this book? I mean, it's...
It's like 600, maybe?
550-odd, yeah. And the next one's even thicker.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. It's a lot of reading.
Do you guys have any predictions on where you think this is going to go?
Selena ends up with who, Bindi?
Dorian.
Dorian?
It's really strange.
Really?
Yeah, I have this weird feeling, just a few little setups throughout the book. Because they met when they were younger, right?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, and just something in that story. And then Sorcha,
when
she died, I just thought they would come together because they had both lost their loved ones and they could
reminisce. Is it an alliance of love or a military alliance?
So for me, Kaol's just like out of the picture because the Fae, what is it? They can't harm their mate or their...
Yeah, well, yeah, it's like... It's impossible them to imagine doing
so,
that. Yeah.
And in the previous book, well, Selena was like,
and
to kill Kaol.
She even says that to Rowan, too, when they're talking about Fae. Yeah,
that's right.
And also, I mean...
But can you be mates with...
a human?
Yeah. Oh, see? But he's not Fae, though.
But that does...
So he's probably exempt to those rules.
That quote, which we were talking about before we started recording, was how Dorian says to Kaol, like, you can't choose the parts of her to love. Whereas he's kind of accepted her, even though, like, they're separated now. So,
yeah.
I see that.
Yeah, I feel like there's definitely going to be another
hook-up
between them, at least.
I didn't think about that, but that's interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely left field, especially because of my opinion on Dorian in the last two books. I really don't like him.
No.
This book, he's really come around. Yeah, he's grown a lot.
Yeah.
And even though he was just, like, in the back, story in the background.
Particularly with his relationship with Sorcha, who was from Fenharrow, which is one of the countries that was like just overtaken and like all the magic wielders were killed, which is her family. And he like it's sort of like his perception of everything has really grown a lot and he's kind of realizing what an asshole his father is. So,
Should we do our favourites?
I think we should.
Yes.
Yeah. We've got to wrap this up at some point, right?
Yeah, well, we could be here forever. Favourite moment? Who wants to go first?
I'll go.
You go.
My favourite moment was your least favourite moment. It was the war games. So I loved when Manon and Abraxas met and created a friendship. And, yeah, I really loved that part of it.
I already talked all about mine, which is scene where she's like, at her very rock bottom, and baby Aelin tells her to get up. It gets me every time.
Gets you every time?
Yep.
Mine was the flashback of the parents dying. Not because.
No, I don't. Just
I just like that. So I thought that was really well done, and it just really added a lot to the story.
Yeah.
It's very visual, those scenes.
The whole scene where the king comes and Dorian's there, and you go, oh.
Yeah.
And then, you know. Yeah. All these characters we know are all here. There's just.
And she finds them dead in their bed.
I actually felt quite sad.
It's kind of sickening the way it was described too, and then obviously
the panic and the running away.
Yeah, the lady's maid, Lady Marion, who also sacrifices herself.
Yeah, so that was my favorite part.
Okay, a favorite character,
Rowan.
Same.
Yeah,
Manon.
Yes.
Even though parts that were a bit dull with her, I thought as a character she shone.
She's going somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Favorite quote, Bindi?
So my favourite quote comes from my favourite character, which is, "I wish you to become who you were born to become queen." And that's from Rowan Whitethorn.
My favourite, I kind of have two quotes, and they're both to do with Manon, funnily enough. This is actually quite towards the beginning. And one, she says, "You didn't need a weapon at all when you were born one." And that's just like her whole character in a quote, basically. And then the other one is, "Witches didn't need blood to survive, but humans didn't need wine either."
Ooh, I like that. That's
yeah,
nice.
That's a good one.
That's nice.
Yeah.
For me, mine is, "I see her slipping away bit by bit because you shove her down when she so desperately needs someone to help her back up." That's Emery's talking to Rowan.
Yeah.
He's chastising him.
And that's
when he stands up to him.
Yeah, when she's just been like seriously just beat down. She's at her lowest again. And I like that one too because someone actually finally stands up to Rowan.
And he doesn't, he listens. And
yeah. And then that leads into when he just like basically just like, he doesn't kidnap Luca to go in on his scheme, but he basically does.
Yeah.
And what about a rating?
Yeah, so I will give it a very generous two.
Two?
That's lower than what you rated the other books.
Yeah, so.
Even though you said you like this one more than the other ones.
Yes, I know.
It's confusing.
It is confusing, but I was feeling different at the time when I was
That's
reading
fair.
Them.
So.
Your grading scales got hard.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like a HSC mark, and now it's like a hard, we're in a harder class.
I found that more I've reviewed things, like I'm a bit more harsher in my
I think I was just trying to be nice. Previously.
That's, you know what, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Luke?
I give it 4 stars. What a shock.
I mean, it's a big shock that I'm giving it 5, so.
I mean, I just went 4 stars because I really liked most of it. There were a few things I didn't like. Maybe I could have, maybe retroactively I'd rate the last two books maybe 3.5 stars each and this one being 4.
Yeah.
If I had to think about it like that.
That's also fair.
Yes. Yeah,
just like reshift the grading, the book grading system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I already said I rated it 5.
Oh, you've already spoken.
I said that while you were...
Just...
Yeah.
Did you rate the others 5?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I love all of these books.
This is your favourite though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard because I love all of, like, the rest of them are, like, equally as great, but, like, this is the starting point of them being amazing, so it's kind of just, like, by default, like, my favourite. It's hard to pit them against each other, to be honest.
Those are our thoughts on Air of Fire by Sarah J. Maas.
Thank you for joining us again, Bindi.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you for joining us, dear listener.
We can't wait to talk to you next time when we chat you up.